Tennessee Williams is not easy on his female characters, from Blanche DuBois to Maggie the Cat. He created women tortured by the desire for freedom, but trapped by the social mores and cruelties of their time. In a long-shelved screenplay by Tennessee Williams called The Loss of a Teardrop Diamond, Ellen Burstyn plays just such a role. We meet Miss Addie in an upstairs bedroom where she lies paralyzed by a series of strokes. She summons another free spirit, played by Bryce Dallas Howard, who remembers her as a woman who'd escaped.
She said you wrote travel books.
My base was Hong Kong. There's much tolerance there. And here?
I would say none at all.
Yes. So I elected to spend my life in the tolerant Orient. But things that one elects are often circumvented by others.
Ellen Burstyn playing Miss Addie. She's a Tony, Oscar, and Emmy Award winner. This film, again, is called The Loss of a Teardrop Diamond, and she joins us in just a moment. We know that many of you are huge fans of hers and that you've enjoyed her work for years. She knows that, too. So if you have an actual question for Ellen Burstyn, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And Ellen Burstyn joins us now from our bureau in New York. And welcome to Talk of the Nation. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you. Nice to be on.
And first, you get a script. You look at the author line, and it says Tennessee Williams. It's got to do a double take there.
Yes, I did. Well, I had heard about it first, of course, before I read the script. And I read it, and it was an intriguing character. And then I spoke to the director who came out to my house, and we met, and I was so impressed with her because she was an actress,
mm-hmm.
Jodi Markell, and she, in her research, had discovered this unproduced Tennessee Williams screenplay, and she decided she wanted to direct it. So she found a producer who raised the money and actually was going into production. So I was very enthusiastic about her, creative way she had brought this to fruition. So I climbed aboard, and I'm glad I did because I had never played a Tennessee Williams character professionally. I'd worked on a couple at the Actors Studio, but not professionally. As a matter of fact, now that I think about it, I auditioned for the Actors Studio playing Maggie the Cat.
Quite some time ago.
Yeah. And then late in Tennessee's career, he sent me a play he wanted me to do, but it wasn't one of his best plays, and I was very booked at the time, so I didn't do it. And then later I realized I had missed an opportunity to create a Tennessee Williams character. So when this came along, I thought, oh, good. I thought I'd missed my chance, but here's a second chance. So I was very glad to do it.
To create a Tennessee Williams character. When is his name on the screenplay, do you ever say, could I change that line just a little bit?
it didn't occur to me, no. And there was nothing about any of the lines that I would want to change. He had such a beautiful lyric gift that the lines just come out easily.
Why is it that something like this sits on a shelf for all those years?
Well, it's hard to answer. Tennessee wrote all the time. He would go back over things and redo them, and he would write something as a one-act play, and then later he'd redo it as a three-act play. And it just may be that he found another way to explore whatever it is he was looking at in this play in something else, so he didn't feel the need to go back over it. Hmm. I always feel these lost female characters that he created were his own feminine side that he had to keep hidden, because at that time it was not so easily to be open about being gay.
No.
So we all benefited from his suppressed femininity.
Well, this is quite a character trapped in bed. That, A, must be a physical challenge from the get-go because you can't use a lot of the tools that you bring to your game.
Yeah, I visited a hospital and observed a woman who had strokes the way my character did. She, unfortunately, couldn't talk. But I was able to see what it's like to be trapped inside a body, to have life going on inside but not be able to express it. And it was heartbreaking. But it was very helpful for me artistically to be able to experience that. And then once I was in that body, I just stayed there and let it go into its quietness and use the rest of what I could work with.
And it is a character who has led, and she's not on screen all that long. She's very vivid and has led an extraordinary life.
Well, she was a world traveler. And that little clip that you played where she said that she chose to live in the tolerant Orient because there wasn't enough tolerance here. And it, of course, made me wonder, well, why did she need tolerance? What about her did she need to have other people be tolerant of? So it made me wonder if perhaps she hadn't been gay also.
Hmm.
She's a world traveler, and she chose to live in Hong Kong. So it just made me think that there's a hint of that, just a little hint of it in the script. But those are the kind of things that feed you as an actress, you know, and fill in the background in a way so the character becomes more alive for you.
Few of you will have had the opportunity to see The Loss of a Teardrop Diamond as yet. It is in theaters in some cities now. It is set to expand into wide release later this month. Our guest is Ellen Burstyn, Oscar, Tony, and Emmy Award winner. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And let's start with Ronald. Ronald with us from Columbia in South Carolina.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to say, Miss Ellen, that I'm a big fan of yours. I enjoyed watching you in the movie The Exorcist a long time ago, and I really enjoyed your recent work in the series Big Love. But my question for you was, every time I watch the movie Requiem for a Dream, I find that a very difficult movie to watch just because of the psychological spiral that all the characters go through. And I wanted to get from you what it took really to take part in that movie and to watch your character's descent. I mean, what did it take to really get into that role for you?
Well, you know, of course, the way I work, I always have to go inside and find those places in myself that harmonize, that are similar to what the character's going through. And, you know, she was an addict, so I had to examine my own tendencies toward various kinds of addictions. The funny thing about doing that is, even though it's difficult to do it on the set when you're actually playing those parts of the script, at the end of the day, when you're finished and you've gone there, you've gone down into your own depths and come back up, it's exhilarating. You feel really very alive and full of creative juices. So it ends up being difficult, but really fun.
Yeah, here's an email just about that same picture. After watching Requiem for a Dream, one cannot ever be the same. It literally sticks with you in a kind of comfortable sort of way after playing that role in this film. Did you have a hard time recovering since your involvement was so much more involved than just watching a film? That from Deanna in Franklin, Tennessee.
Yeah, well, that's really the same answer. I didn't have trouble recovering. I remember, actually, Darren Aronofsky, the director, coming in to talk to me one day at the end of the shooting. I was in my trailer getting dressed, and he came in to see if I was okay because it had been such a hard day. And I remember feeling really excited and happy and saying, yeah, I'm fine, because it's just exhilarating to... you know, it's like riding waves out in a high wind. Once you get going, you just soar.
Ronald, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. Let's go next to, this is Anne. Anne with us from Kansas City.
Oh, hi. Thank you. Ellen, I'm just so honored to be hearing your voice and to just say that I just finished reading your memoir on Becoming Myself this week. And, then when I heard you were going to be on this show, I just put my calendar notice on for this because it just was an incredible read. I mean, I was just so, I couldn't put it down. It was so good. I loved hearing your story and your search and your journey. Now that you, what I'd love to know is if you're thinking about writing a sequel, you now that you've waited 25 years and you worked on Becoming Yourself and you met this love, did you know, I would love to know what a relationship looks like where you are able to maintain yourself and it's, you know, good. Have you thought about that?
You know, it's like anything else. It's about being conscious, you know, not falling asleep and operating out of habit. I want to thank you for reading the book. It means a lot to me because it was difficult to write in that I was, you know, very honest about my life. And I, every time I thought about it, I thought, oh, are you sure you want to put all this stuff out there? And it always makes me cringe a little bit. But then when I hear from people like you, that really, that it helped them in some way, I feel very grateful.
I loved it. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Anne.
To hear your voice. I love you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for the call, Anne. Did you find writing about yourself that as you're sitting there at the word processor, you sort of become a character in an odd way?
No, not really. First of all, I write longhand.
Ah.
And I had all my diaries from all the way back. From the 1950s. So it was more, the title of the book is Lessons in Becoming Myself. And that's really what I was learning as I was writing, because I would read certain things I had written 20 or 30 years before and go, what? Wake up, girl. What is the matter with you? And as it went along, I could see my own slow dawning of kind of realizing the traps I was functioning in.
Our guest is Ellen Burstyn. She's starring in Loss of a Teardrop Diamond, a new movie that is coming out based on a previously unproduced screenplay by Tennessee Williams. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's get another caller in. This is Ray. Ray calling from Detroit.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I'm a Cass Tech grad, the chairman of the alumni. And I know that Ms. Burstyn was at Cass. I wanted to know if she was a performing arts student and if that helped her get to the kind of pinnacle of acting success that she has gotten to.
No, I was in the art department. I majored in fashion illustration, but I was a member of the drama club, and I was captain of the cheerleaders. So I was performing. In that way, I have very fond memories of Cass. What year did you graduate?
I'm a 48.
Uh-huh. I was after you. Of course, you know I didn't graduate, if you've read my book, but I did get out. But I have very fond memories. Cass Tech is a wonderful school.
Well, we'll make sure that you get a copy of The Green Scene to get you up to date. We're trying to save the building that you graduated from. We have a new high school right next door. But we'll get you up to date, and good luck on your new show. I know that you'll be excellent and will thrill everybody. Thank you for taking the call.
Ray,
thanks
very much. I wanted to ask you, with the you know, the material for the movie, when we got the screener, they bring along, you know, information about all the actors and the plots, synopsis and all of that. But your biography, you know, it contains all the stuff you'd expect, winning the Tony Award and the Academy Award in the same year and same time next year. Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, your work with Martin Scorsese. And, you know, one thing after another, Harry and Tonto, Silence of the North, Divine Secrets of the Sister of the Yaha Sisterhood. And then it goes down through, and finally there's this paragraph. In her early years, known as Ellen McRae, she was cast in numerous television episodes, including Surfside 6, The Dick Powell Show, Ben Casey, Perry Mason, Laramie, Wagon Train, Craft Suspense Theater, The Doctors, The Iron Horse, The Virginian, and Gunsmoke, and was a regular as a Glee girl on the Jackie Gleason Show.
Right. That was early in my career.
It was. Don't you think after all that other stuff, you could drop Surfside 6 after all this time?
I didn't put that in there. I don't know where that came from.
So what did you do as a Glee girl?
Well, Jackie Gleason, when he did his show live, the variety show, mm-hmm. he had several categories of girls. There were the Away We Go girls at the beginning of the show. There were the June Taylor dancers, the June Taylor show girls. And then my category, we were called the lead-in, the tie-in. We were the tie-in between the show and the commercial. So, you know, there would be a close-up of us, and usually I was in a funny costume, and then I would, you know, introduce the commercial. He just liked to have a lot of pretty girls on the show.
And it seemed to serve him pretty well. Let's see if we get another caller on the line. This is Carolyn. Carolyn with us from Akron, Ohio.
Hi. I am just so thrilled to be speaking to you. I love everything you do. You're one of those actors that anytime you just... you know you are that character, and it's so refreshing to watch you. I wanted to ask about something. I loved it. You played Elliot's mother on an episode of Law & Order SVU, mm-hmm. and you were bipolar. And I just wondered, again, it was very believable, and it was a very touching story. Do you know if they're going to bring you back to do that again, or will you appear again as Elliot's mother?
Well, as far as I know, they haven't made any plans to, but they certainly left it open in the story where they could bring me back.
Right.
And they may, but they haven't said that yet.
Okay. Well, as I said, it's just when you, as in Requiem, you're so believable. You're just so wonderful. Everything you've ever done, I just love. And again, I wish you the best, and I'm honored to speak to you.
Thank you. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Carolyn. And you are coming back in the third season of Big Love?
I don't think so. Not at the moment.
Oh, that seems a pity.
Well, I can't explain it. I don't know.
Well, it just seems inexplicable to those of us who think the producers and writers of that show would have an actor of your skills at least the possibility of using you and wouldn't take that advantage. But anyway, we wish you the best of luck with the new picture.
Thank you very much.
It's called The Loss of a Teardrop Diamond. And again, it's playing in some cities right now and opens up wide later this month. Ellen Burstyn, of course, an Oscar, Tony, and Emmy Award winner. And she joined us from our bureau in New York. Tomorrow, it's Talk of the Nation Science Friday with the latest on obesity research and ideas for slimming American waistlines. I'm going to be out on vacation the next couple of weeks. Rebecca Roberts will be here on Monday. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.